This is Gold Leader. Get set up for your attack run. All right, I'll...
Gold 2, standing by.
All right, check it once, check
Porkins,
it twice.
Porkins is here! I need a large cheese and sausage with a side of crazy bread and some dipping sauce.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Star Wars Report podcast, episode 162. I'm Riley Blanton, your host for this evening. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate. I'm so glad that you've tuned in to the Star Wars Report podcast. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. We're talking Star Wars Celebration and much more. And here to help me do that is my good friend and yours. He is the Expanded Universe. He's the legendary... emphasis on legends. Expanded Universe fan. It's Mark Curlman, everybody.
Hey, everybody. So glad to be here. Still a little cold from the caving experience over the weekend. Got to go into a nice little rare cave and a nice little cave loop that I get to go to all the time. So fun. So awesome. But not as awesome as being here talking about the legendary Star Wars.
Mark, do you ever, when you're out with the scouts or spelunking, I guess, do you ever kind of just occasionally just want to hear... your weapons, you will not need them.
That would be good. That would be good. You know, in fact, this is the first time I went to the lava beds without the scouts. I went with friends of mine that we were all scouts when we were kids, and they used to go to the lava beds all the time. But I'd moved up here after I'd gone out of Cub Scouts and stuff. So it was really, you know, fun to go and do it with them and go to places that they went to all the time and stuff. And then, like I said, it was amazing because, you know, the ground there is just all busted up and stuff, you know, and we're walking over to catacombs and I'm like, wait, it's my catacombs. And we're looking over this rail and she goes over the rail and she ducks between these two little rocks. And I'm like, right. Where is she going? And I follow her. I'm like, is that the hole? You know, and then we go through this little rock and then all of a sudden there's this 40-foot round little, Utapau little sinkhole, you know, and it goes down about 40 or so feet. And then down at the bottom is this little locked gate. And that's where the cave entrance is. It's literally right next to it. I mean, the coolest thing was it was attached to caves that we had discovered on other trips. We were in that shaft, but when we were going north and we got to the end of it, on the other side of that collapse was the ice cave. It was like, oh, it was so cool to find that out, man. I just imagine what it'd be like to go into Luke's cave, though, being all warm and stuff like it is, because these were cold.
It's like, well, as it is in Oregon, but it, wow, enough of this. I'm now intimidated by your crazy Oregonist, Mark. Enough of this. Let's bring a guy from Chicago in here. It's a good friend of the Star Wars Report podcast. It's Jimmy Mack, everybody.
Plenty cold in Chicago too, but I cannot compete with Mark's cave stories. So I was in a cave and I want to go in there and I said, what's in there? And then my friend said, only what you take with you. And then I walked into the cave and then I saw there was lava beds and I thought to myself, oh my God, this is like Mustafar all over again. I loved you, Anakin. You're like a brother to me. And then I kept walking in and it was cold in there and there was this ice cave and I was like, oh my God. And then I started hanging upside down from the cave and I couldn't reach my leg. And it was like the Wampa came in. It was a nightmare.
Anyway, guys, thanks for tuning into this week's Star Wars Report podcast. We'll catch you next week. We'll be talking. No, that's actually.
I have no cave stories. Dang it!
You've never been spelunking, Jimmy?
I've never spelunked. No, sir. I have not spelunked. Well,
neither have I. So Mark, one of these days, maybe we can podcast from the faux Yoda's cave. No.
Yeah. I go to the nice and weenie type caves. I mean, yeah, some of them are a little intense, but I was watching this one called Deep Cave in Texas and it's got an alternate entrance and these guys were squeezing through there. I had a panic attack watching it. I'm like, no. Did he get out? I had to research to find out there was a second entrance because the guy looked like he wasn't getting out. And I'm like, dude, you got to get a chisel, man. Get a chisel now.
well, all right, gentlemen, let's tunnel our way into the Star Wars Celebration segment.
I come all the way from Norway, and this was amazing.
It's awesome.
Awesome.
So awesome.
It's been the most amazing experience of my life.
That's right. Star Wars Celebration, as we record this, a mere 2 weeks away, we will be in Anaheim, California, celebrating that galaxy far, far away. And man, is it going to be an amazing time. Jimmy, I've got to ask right off the bat, before we jump into like some of the specifics of the event, you and your co-host from Rebel Force Radio, Jason, are hosting the Behind the Scenes stage.
Yes.
And so we actually have some information about it. What are you most looking forward to? What should fans be most excited about coming to the Behind the Scenes stage?
You know what is going to be great? It's just right off the bat, at the very beginning of the entire convention, we are kicking things off with the simulcast of the J.J. Abrams, Kathleen Kennedy panel, where, I mean, all indicators are pointing to that panel as being the prime spot to see new footage from The Force Awakens. I don't know what they're going to do. They're keeping that all very top secret. But
you weren't going to
get our fingers crossed. And so we're not actually going to be at that panel itself in the celebration stage. We want everyone to have the opportunity to do it. So we are sacrificing our spots in there because we want to be at our home stage, the behind the scenes stage. And we want everyone to pack the seats in that 1,000 seat room. And let's have a viewing party. Let's have a start to kick off celebration. Let's all watch the JJ panel together. Sure, you can, you know, of course, nothing is better than being in the actual room itself. But do the math. That room's going to hold 4,000 people. Those wristbands are going to go very fast.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone feeling anxiety about the fact that they're not going to be in the actual room itself, because you know what? We're going to be screening this thing live as it happens in all the main stage rooms. And in our room, we want it to be a crazy time. We want there to be more energy coming out of the behind the scenes stage room than in all of the rooms combined. And so we want to have a viewing party with Star Wars Report listeners, Rebel Force Radio listeners, and anyone who attends Celebration. I'm really excited that that is what's going to be kicking things off. I look back at previous celebrations, more specifically in Indianapolis for Celebration 3, 2005. They had a huge opening ceremony in this giant auditorium, and they showed footage from Revenge of the Sith. And this was a solid month before it came out. And the scene they featured was from the very beginning when Anakin and Obi-Wan take their Jedi starfighters and they fly through a lot of the droid fighters, and they crash land in the hangar and leap out of the cockpits.
Nice.
And start slashing away at battle droids. The place went nuts. We couldn't believe what we were seeing. And I think that this is not only going to rival that moment, but it's going to completely rock the epicenter of California and shake the San Andreas Fault loose from the continent.
Yeah.
And it's become its own state. It'll be the state of Star Wars. I don't know where Anaheim exactly falls on the fault line, so I'm kind of dreaming out loud here.
Fair enough. I'll tell you what.
The new Genosha.
Actually, forget about it. It's not going to be the new state of Star Wars. It's going to become Star Wars country. And it's going to be great. And we'll just, you know, we'll say, JJ, you're president. And so that way he'll stick around for a little longer. Maybe sign something.
I mean, he was evidently hesitant to go to England. So I guess we'd solve that issue for him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll just keep him. We'll keep him on in Star Wars country, which is just like floating adrift in the Pacific. And yeah. I'll just stay there. You know, it's like, oh, why go?
Yeah. Now that main event is going to be amazing. Because I remember, so I was not at Celebration 3 or 4, but I was at 5 and 6. And I remember lining up super early for the George Lucas panel. I made the right call. And this is the weird thing. So I'm going to get Jimmy Max, Star Wars convention coach, on for a moment and give me advice. So, like, there's a certain value of sleep at these events that you need to be able to function. So it's not about like getting, you know, a sweet 9 hours, but you have to get enough to actually, you know, like enjoy your time there. So I'm thinking the sweet spot might be like get up super early in the morning, and see if I can get in, And if not, then of course, join the party at the behind-the-scenes stage. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards. I'm not sure if I have it in me to camp out all night.
Well, here's the thing. Even, you know, I recommend you do try to get in, because that's going to be a lot of energy in that room. But I'm telling you, our screening, our simulcast in the behind-the-scenes stage room is going to be rocking. It is going to be rocking like crazy. And when they show that footage, people are going to go absolutely insane. And that's what we're all there for, isn't it, right? I mean, what? Yeah. Are you there to be in the same room with J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy? No. We all want to see the footage. That's what matters the most. And that's why people want to sit in that celebration stage room. Yeah. So we're bringing you the prime material, and you're going to see it just like anyone else in that room sees it. So it's going to be very exciting. Very exciting. We can't wait for that. So that's the, you know, just kicking the whole thing off. That's the one thing we're really looking forward to. There are so many great panels. I can't really pinpoint which one I think is like my favorite. Yeah. I'm looking forward to hosting the Fan Film Awards. I'm very much looking forward to Pablo Hidalgo and Tom Spina's look at the...
Is that the Cantina?
Cantina. Yeah. They're bringing that back.
I heard so many good things about that panel, and I wasn't there. And it was one of those ones that I heard was really good in retrospect.
I heard it was great. My brother attended it, and he thought it was incredible. And I'm so glad I'm going to be able to see it myself this time. Outside the behind-the-scenes stage, the thing that I'm really looking forward to the most, probably in the whole weekend, is Smuggler's Gambit on the celebration stage Saturday at 1 o'clock. Now, it's the follow-up to Smuggler's Gambit. This is Smuggler's Bounty, our sequel to the 2012 live audio drama that we put together at Star Wars Celebration 6. And features a lot of Clone Wars actors and actors even outside Star Wars. I can't reveal exactly who's in the cast right now for Smuggler's Bounty, but what's interesting about it, I can say a couple names. I can tell you that Sam Witwer is going to be in it. James Arnold Taylor, of course, will be in it. It's nice. On the celebration stage, which is his stage. David Collins, of course, is Han Solo.
Uncanny Han Solo, I might add.
That's such a great Han Solo. Actually, you know, we discovered David and his skills at doing Han Solo going back a number of years when I asked him to write a Star Wars Christmas song because I wanted to include it on one of our Christmas podcasts. And he really took it to task, and he came up with this Han Solo Chewbacca Christmas song performed on the Millennium Falcon, complete with full sound effects and music. David's a great musician. And a little back and forth between Han and Chewie. We're like, oh, my God, he sounds just like Harrison Ford. He's doing a young Han Solo dead on. So it's just been snowballing. We were looking for the best opportunity to showcase David's skills and showcase my partner, Kyle Newman, who's the director of Smuggler's Bounty, his skills as a director, very passionate Star Wars fan. Director.
I hate to break it out, but before we get more details, because I'm definitely going to be there, I have to ask, is Taylor Swift going to be a special guest?
You know, I like I said, I can't talk about the cast.
It wasn't a no, gentlemen.
But, so Kyle is the director, and I'm the producer. I'll be on stage firing off. We have put together over 100 custom design sound effects for this event, and it all be coming to you live like old time radio. We'll have actors on stage reading the script and just, you know, throwing the pages down on the floor as we move on. And it's so much fun, and we got such a great response from it when we did it at Celebration 6. It ended up on StarWars.com's top 10 all time great Star Wars celebration moments. And for that, Mary Franklin suggested that. And for that, we are so thankful to her. And so we're bringing it back. And it's going to be in the celebration stage this time in that room. And like I said, it's a 4,000-seat arena. And we're really going to try to bring it big time this time around. We learned a lot the first time we did it.
Because I remember the first time you guys did it, it was kind of experimental. Because I remember seeing it on the program, and that was the first time I learned about it. What is this smugglers thing? That doesn't. Wait a second. And then I realized what it was. And it's such a brilliant idea because there is such a huge passion for that kind of audio programming going back to the radio dramas.
Oh, yeah. We're very inspired by the Brian Daly NPR Star Wars radio dramas from the 80s and 90s. And it all came out of this experience I had a few years ago where I was performing in a radio play, a live radio play on stage in front of a packed theater. I was in It's a Wonderful Life. And this was a production I did for Next Media Chicago, and it was broadcast on a bunch of local radio stations and sold out crowd. And it was just a really great experience. And I ended up doing it for a few years. And I was telling Jason about it the night or the morning after we had done it. And we were just texting each other. How was it last night? Oh, it was fantastic. You know, we did this and that, and it was so cool. He just writes me back. We should do something like this at Celebration. And I looked at the text. I was like, holy crap. So I stopped texting and I called him and I was like, wait a second. What do you have in mind? I don't know. We should just get some Clone Wars actors on stage and just read a script and see what happens. And so I said, wow, that's crazy. And, I knew right away we had to have a script. And I knew Kyle Newman is always working on some sort of Star Wars material. And so he had a few scripts, and we decided to go with a Han and Chewie adventure. And we just pulled it off. And it, without any sort of like legitimate cast rehearsal, we had a few read-throughs with a couple of actors. But that was about it. And we just got up on stage, and it all happened magically. It was magic. So, yeah, we're so happy and thankful we're going to get the opportunity to do it again.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, I will definitely be there. It's one of my can't miss, because especially with this celebration, because over the last couple of years, especially doing the Star Wars Report, you make so many new friends and there's so many more people. I remember my first celebration, I had like two or three people that I knew at all. And then the second celebration, a great time hanging out. And then this celebration, there are like so many people that I want to get a chance to hang out with and say hi to that I have no idea how I'll possibly do it all. But there are a few panels that are can't miss. But other than that, I'm going to try to really, you know, keep a little bit more time free to actually just enjoy the experience with other fans and friends that you make through this kind of thing. Cause that's really what makes Celebration special. Is that sort of thing. But then, like, and it's funny because we mentioned it on the StarWarsReport.com blog this week. I put up Riley's personal top five can't miss events at Celebration, and we're kind of hitting them all, Jimmy, in order. But I also want to mention the music of John Williams with David Collins. And in fact, as I was working today, I was just listening to the most recent episode of Star Wars Oxygen, and you guys were talking about this amazing panel that David's doing on the digital stage. You guys had a little bit more specifics. Now, so this is not just the music of John Williams. This is a very specific angle.
Right, right. David is presenting a retrospective of the music from Empire Strikes Back that was originally composed for the film, but for whatever reason during editorial was not used. Now, this music's been available via soundtracks for years, a lot of it. But no one has actually ever seen a projected presentation of the actual scenes from Empire with the music restored. And that's what David's going to be doing. He's going to be talking in great detail about these pieces of music and then actually projecting the scenes from Empire from which they were stripped from. And now he actually put the music back in. We've played audio of this type of thing with the dialogue and the music restored on Star Wars Oxygen. But this is the first time you're ever actually going to be able to see it projected on a giant digital screen in full high def glory. And that's what that panel's all about. And that's definitely a labor of love for David, something he suggested himself. And I'm so happy they're running with it. So that's a great panel too. Unfortunately, I won't be able to see that one because I'm going to be manning down the behind the scenes stage. Hey, I have an exclusive for you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm actually going to play one sound that I have prepared for Smuggler's Gambit.
Nice.
At this point, Kyle Newman hasn't even heard this yet. So, and we're reviewing all the sounds, I think, in like an hour and a half. So I have it all prepared and out in front of me right now.
Excellent.
So I'm
going to
play this one. I'm not going to describe what's happening in the scene. It's very brief, very violent. Here it is. There you go.
Ouch. The death of Han Solo.
I don't think so.
In a sudden twist, Chewbacca turns traitor.
I think we clearly heard a plastic crunch there as opposed to a plastic bone.
You heard it here first, Smuggler's Bounty.
Hey, don't reveal all of my tricks, okay, Herleman? Celery. Crunch. So there it is. You will be hearing that at some point during Smuggler's Gambit, and I can't wait. I absolutely cannot wait for that.
These are the only types of exclusives you'll hear.
It is an exclusive.
I appreciate it, sir. No, you heard it here first. The death of Han Solo as betrayed by his best friend Chewbacca to happen.
Oh boy. That'll shake the eardrums.
Yeah, no, and another really unique event going on at Celebration. This is my number three personally, and I probably, due to the schedule, won't be able to see the whole film, but I do not want to miss the introduction and opening act of Revenge of the Sith 3D. That's definitely one not to miss at all.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, and most especially, it's going to have a special introduction by Ian McDiarmid.
Oh, which that is unbelievable.
Which, and it's funny because that actually is like a throwback, because I remember the first Star Wars soundtrack I ever bought personally was the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack. Because growing up, I always wore out my older sister's CDs, listening over and over, trying to figure out. Like, I heard the soundtracks, Jimmy, way more than I'd ever seen the films. And in fact, many more times before I ever saw a Star Wars film, I heard the soundtracks all the time from my older siblings playing them.
Really?
Yeah. It's a weird
older
thing.
Sister. So I thank God you grabbed the Star Wars soundtrack and not the New Kids on the Block.
Fair enough. Yeah, this is true. Yeah, because and the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack has that really cool kind of DVD companion with an introduction by Ian McDiarmid.
That's right.
And I remember seeing that and seeing footage from Revenge of the Sith before I saw the movie. And just being amazed at the lava planet there. But yeah, no, Ian McDiarmid, he knows how to act, but he's got a commanding presence. Speaking from experience, he's got a commanding presence on stage.
He does. You know, I actually saw him perform Shakespeare in Chicago at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. And that was an experience because never seeing him act before, as a matter of fact, never even seeing the man in person prior to that night, when he came out on stage, I got like a rush, like it was Mick Jagger and the Stones or something, you know. I was like, whoa, this is the full-on Ian McDiarmid live experience here. He's in his element. He's performing Shakespeare, and he's so into it and intense and doing little things here and there that remind me of the Emperor. Specifically at this one point, it was the play was Timon of Athens. And at this one point, he gets up and disrupts this dinner party. And he reaches into this bowl and starts splashing water on people. And when he did it, it was like he bent his fingers like he was using the Sith lightning on him. And I was like, I was the only one up in my, you know, standing up going, yeah! Nobody understood what the hell it was. You know, I was with the wine and cheese crowd that night. And like, I didn't stand nice. Out enough from my Star Wars t-shirt and blue jeans. Believe me, I was the only one.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things. Any small Star Wars line, you're just like, yeah.
Anything that just remotely.
Young fool.
Yeah. I get a fist bump from my wife when one comes up. I'm like, you know it. You know, everybody slips one in.
So, but yeah, you know, he does have that kind of presence on stage. And I have seen him since at Celebration 6. and at a few other events. And yeah, he's a commanding presence.
Indeed, indeed. And speaking of a commanding presence, it's Ahsoka's back. And most interestingly, after that last amazing season finale of Star Wars Rebels Season 1, we will see, surprisingly to me, I'm genuinely shocked that they're doing it this early in the year, but we will see the premiere of Star Wars Rebels Season 2, which will continue the adventures of the crew of the Ghost.
Yes, and I have heard from Henry Gilroy himself, Clone Wars writer, that it will be a season premiere to blow you away. You know, television doesn't take season premieres or season finales very lightly at all. Mm-hmm. You know, prior eras and generations of television viewing, we came to expect occasionally something cool would happen, but not always. But nowadays, with television like Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead, where it's like so much is vested in the way they kick off and the way they end a season, that now you're starting to see that spill over into things like animated TV and Star Wars Rebels. And I'm seeing that vested interest being placed into the finales and the premieres of, I saw it toward the end of the Clone Wars era too. We all did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love how television is shifting. And it also makes me wonder, because this is something they've been totally keeping under wraps and I have no insight on it, but because of the fact that this season premiere is happening when it's happening, does that mean we're going to see an earlier return of fresh Rebels episodes to TV than we thought? Are we going to have to wait till October for the rest of the world to finally see this premiere that a handful got to see at Star Wars Celebration? Or are we going to have to wait a month? I'm beginning to think that Star Wars Rebels Season 2 is going to kick off in the spring and be split in half. 13 episodes in the spring, 13 episodes in the fall. What do you guys think?
I mean, it makes no sense to, if it's ready, I don't see why they would wait, you're right, until October to actually show it to the fans. And because you know that once, for me, it doesn't even make sense to wait more than, you know, a few weeks, because all of the fans in Anaheim will have seen it. So I think it definitely makes sense to me. What's interesting is we know it'll be more episodes. It'll be interesting to see how many more. Because if they do like a full 22 or 24 or 26 episode run, that would make sense. It would not if
they're... But according to Freddie Prinze Jr., they recorded double the amount of episodes for season 2 compared to season 1. So season 1 was 13 episodes proper for the season, not counting Spark of Rebellion or any of those promo videos they released.
Yeah, yeah.
13 episodes. So if we're taking that, if we're taking what Freddie says at face value, that means 26 episodes for season 2. And we've also seen the trend in television to split seasons. Give you the first half, take a break, come back with the second half. And what does that do? It gives you double the amount of opportunities for quality season premieres and quality season finales.
That is the thing.
Absolutely.
Like with Walking Dead, they do that all the time. And it's interesting because I think Star Wars Rebels, I'm trying to remember I think it was season 3 of Rebels that they had the shadow of Darth Maul that was alluded to right at
of the
end.
Clone Wars?
Yeah. That was kind of the first time we really got that super badass cliffhanger, right?
Right, right. Season 3, it was the final scene in the Night Sisters trilogy. And that trilogy, I actually got to see in its entirety before it aired. And I saw it in a movie theater in Chicago with Tom King.
That's nice. Right. Yeah, no, because they did an event up here in Atlanta where we saw it. And it was, I remember that distinctly. It was an amazing experience.
You know, Matt Lanter's from Atlanta. At least he spent some time growing up there. He was a bat boy for the Atlanta Braves at one point.
Nice.
Nicely done. It's funny because like all this Hollywood stuff is coming to Atlanta. I hope maybe one of these days one of the Star Wars movies shows up around here because Jimmy, I live in Fayetteville, so it's a suburb or about 45 minutes outside down south. But literally my house is about 5-6 miles from Pinewood Studios, Atlanta, where they're like right now they're starting up the next Captain America movie. So I keep like wandering around Kroger, wondering if Chris Evans shows up or something like that.
He's got the shopping cart with the squeaky wheel. Hey man, I know that's Captain America, man. But you know, and what it would be cool too if they did like a Star Wars spinoff of The Walking Dead, you know, The Walking Dead, the Jedi spirits. And you know, they could all be just like, you know, wandering around like Yoda's walking around in, you know, Georgia and stuff. And comes across the Steve Glosson, you know. Steve welcomes him in and they sit down and they fire up some root leaf stew or something. But no, hey. I'm well, am I going off on a tangent?
Well, you haven't been I've been to Steve's house and I'm not going to confirm nor deny the fact that Yoda in fact does live upstairs in the attic.
Steve told me he said, yeah, you have to if you want to find me it's like you need one of those hydrofoils or something to get to where he lives.
It is out in the sticks for sure. But yeah,
now, is it greedy of me though to want like 28 to 33 episodes next season? I want to see a huge number of episodes. I think, you know, Jimmy, you got something here with the fact that they're putting it out that soon. I mean, I too, if they're not doing a big gap, I want a plethora of episodes.
You know, that's the thing, is I brought up seeing the Night Sisters trilogy before even the first episode aired. And the first episode from that trilogy aired like 2 weeks later. And so for everyone to see the whole story, I had to wait like a solid month.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? We're not doing this round table until everyone's seen all the episodes. We'll do the whole trilogy at once. It turned out to be one of our most popular analysis shows ever. But I took a heap of criticism because it's like, why are you breaking it all up, man? We want to hear. And, you know, I mean, and I love hearing that kind of criticism because people are saying they want to hear what you have to say right now. I thought it would defeat the purpose if I knew everything that happened and, you know, Jason is holding a conversation with Kyle and neither of them had seen it. And maybe Kyle did, or Paul didn't. I forget. But I didn't want to like slip and say something I shouldn't say. So I said, let's just put it off to the end. Yeah. And so then I found after a while, it was kind of nice to hold off on doing any sort of Star Wars Clone Wars arc analysis until you've actually seen the entire arc play out. So I was kind of leaning in that direction, but then we ended up just doing individual episodes for each one because we were never put in that position again where one of us had seen the whole thing like a month and a half before everyone else would.
So
thinking about now with Star Wars Rebels, are you going to show 2,000 people this first episode and then sit on it till next October before
I
think that sounds absurd. Number one, people are going to be shooting video with iPhones or whatever.
Oh, you know it. Yeah. Maybe
putting it up on YouTube and stuff. How long does the legal department want to deal with having to pull that down constantly?
Well, it's like even on the main stage for the first day on Thursday for the JJ panel, you know there are going to be iPhones everywhere. And of course, there are the rumors that they're going to simulcast it, which makes perfect sense. And I can't believe the company that would simulcast that big of a presentation so that the whole world can share in the experience of the reveal of the full theatrical trailer of Star Wars The Force Awakens. That isn't the same company that would just show a premiere and then wait 6 months to actually show it to the fans.
Yeah, right. I mean, let's just use some logic here and think about the way...
I'm sorry, Jimmy, that's forbidden on the podcast.
Yeah, my screen name does not allow that.
What's your screen name?
Illogical Rogue 2, because I killed the first one.
Ooh.
Wait, I haven't heard that story.
The first one. Why? Was he being too logical? Yeah, he was.
He was getting rational.
He was
not compute.
He was a Bothan and the first sacrifice for the podcast.
He was a Vulcan and had to go.
Fair enough. When you think Well, and one last little quick note on this premiere. One thing I'm really excited about, kind of touching back on the season finale aspect of it, is that's just good storytelling. It's kind of a new thing in terms of things like The Walking Dead, but if you think way back to like some of the serials that George would watch, it is kind of that era. So I almost see it as a return to form.
You know, that's the thing, man, with network television and, you know, just over the decades, it became so bloated and it became more part of of the way that they roll things out. They would just stretch things so thin. I don't know if you guys watched ER when it was on, but how many episodes of that show can you watch in one season where absolutely nothing happens? Yeah. All they would do is just like plant these little vague seeds here and there, but there were never any payoffs. Nothing. It was a pain in the butt. You're right. Storytelling has become much more razor sharp and focused because finally now there's so much competition out there via the internet.
Yeah.
That everyone has to raise their stakes. So when you hear people complaining about how things are becoming watered down and homogenized and how there's too many choices and all this, it's just always keep in mind that it's a good thing that the more players are out on the field, the harder everyone has to play.
It's why NBC can't field a show that'll last more than a season, frankly. Because I remember when they did the, what was the Lights Out Ember show that they did a couple, I think they did
Revolution?
Yeah, but it was like, sometimes these shows, there's the conceit of the show, and then they tease that something will happen, and nothing ever happens.
Oh, these networks and these big fat cats that sit in their offices thinking they know how to run entertainment and they know how to tell stories. All they're worried about is just satisfying advertisers and just stretching a premise so thin that you don't even care after a while. And then, you know what they do? They rely on formula so much. Well, that's the way we've always done it. That that you as a consumer, you see this stuff coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
So it is refreshing to see the way that cable television has shaken things up. And God, I mean,
exactly.
25 years ago, who would even think you'd be saying that? But finally, and it took a long time to get there.
But I'll tell you what, like with Rebels specifically, when you see the season finale we did, I'll be honest, Jimmy, I never thought, ever, the thought never crossed my mind that we would see Ahsoka Tano show up in Rebels. There's so many reasons behind that, but I really didn't think that's too daring a story, too daring a risk to take. But to have something like The Mystery of Fulcrum that builds up over several episodes that then actually pays off at the end in a big cliffhanger, it's sort of like living in this dream state of like, where did this television series of Star Wars on my TV screen come from? And it's amazing. I love living in this world.
Yeah, because what we're seeing is such a wealth of material to mine from. And you now have creators working in Star Wars who are very familiar with that material not afraid to use it and to bring it all together. It's a tighter ship, oddly enough. There's more cooks in the kitchen, obviously, because back in the George days, it was just George. And man, oh man, I mean, thinking of all the stuff that guy had on his back at all times, he was able to create. And now we have a new generation of filmmakers, many of whom were actually trained by George Lucas, either directly or indirectly. I don't think you have to necessarily be in the presence of someone to become a mentor of them. I think becoming extremely and intimately familiar with the way an individual operates, and then basing how you operate on what you've learned from them, even if it's from afar, you know, I think you still can be a mentor, or you can be mentored, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, even though J.J. Abrams didn't work directly with George Lucas, you damn well know he was very influenced by George and studied Lucas for years and years and years and years before it ever even became a blip on his screen that there is a possibility he could work in Star Wars, because George had it all locked down for so long.
Yeah.
So it's all people can do is just learn from him and say, you know what? Well, I'm going to take what George did and try to apply it to this or that. But now a guy like J.J. Abrams, who was a student of George Lucas, who was mentored by Lucas, though indirectly, is now able to step in and make something happen with the Star Wars he knows.
So are we saying, like, you're going to get the same level of awesomeness from someone that was mentored by George as you would somebody who stalked George's films?
You mean like, say you compare a J.J. Abrams who never worked with George Lucas directly to a John Knoll who definitely worked directly with George and was mentored by George? I say yes. I say yes because it's the level of appreciation and knowledge you show for someone's catalog. And I think
I
think J.J. Abrams is highly schooled in Lucas University.
Yeah,
I really do. And he's already, just by the things he said and the acknowledgments he's made and some behind the scenes stuff I've heard, J.J. is very, very locked into original trilogy Lucas.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to see. It's sort of like if you're not the direct understudy, but you do have that kind of element of, you know, almost a personal hero that George Lucas was to so many young filmmakers. I think that that almost offers more creative freedom to capture the spirit of what Star Wars is than necessarily having to be, you know, have directly interacted with Lucas.
Let me give you a personal example. Okay. Obviously, you guys know me. You guys know I am so passionate about Star Wars. I obsess over Star Wars. You guys are like that. Our audience is like that.
Yeah.
Here I am working a full adulthood career in audio entertainment, radio. Growing up, I became very fascinated with the work of Ben Burtt. When I first saw him on a Star Wars documentary, I think it was From Star Wars to Jedi, and it featured, no, you know what? It might have been the Making of Empire, which was called SFX, The Making of Empire Strikes Back, and it was narrated by Mark Hamill. You can see the stuff on the Blu-ray.
Yes,
box.
That's the one on the Blu-ray, right?
My original copy of that was taped directly off the TV the day it originally aired. And I think my brother still actually owns that VHS.
Nice.
And yeah, he has something of a museum to our boyhood at his house. It's amazing. Like it. And I'm, nice. You know what? He has our childhood Millennium Falcon too. And I can't believe after, you know, almost 40 years, we're still fighting over whose Millennium Falcon.
I think he's got it.
Yeah, he's got it in his garage. I'll get it back somehow. Trust me. But so I watched this video with Ben, and it featured Ben going out and recording sounds. And at this one, I mean, I'll never forget the sequence. He walks over to a utility pole that, you know, very high, like a radio transmitter. And it had those wires coming off of it, supporting it into the ground to hold it still from the wind. And he walked over to it and placed a microphone on the wire and started tapping it with a metal hammer. And he would move the microphone up and down on the wire. And then he just locked in on the sound of Han Solo's blaster. I mean, you couldn't miss it. It was, pew, 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 and he's just hitting this wire. And I was like, holy crap, they can do that. And so I became very obsessed with sound design, collecting audio. And it led me into a career in radio. And I'm still very obsessed with the whole audio experience. And like Ben Burtt, I knew that I should keep everything and never throw anything away and mix organic with mechanical to create something otherworldly. And so I get to apply that to a presentation like Smuggler's Bounty, which is featuring a lot of sound design I created and a lot of stuff that I took from Ben and made into something that will fit our needs for the play. And I consider myself to be mentored by him because I'm so intimately passionate about the work he's done. And I've researched him so much. I mean, right here, I got sitting next to me, the book, The Sounds of Star Wars. I never have it far from reach. I have it queued up to, effect number 82. What would that be?
Drum roll.
Huh.
Is that the
It's hard to make. It sounds like, oh, that was a blaster.
I think
it sounds like some sort of blaster battle.
It sounds vaguely like, and this might be the Skype thing. It sounds to me, see, now this could be like the whole show. We'll play this game. It sounds to me like the crashing sequences in the back, the kind of distant rumbling crash of snow and structure on Hoth.
Yep, yeah. I was thinking it was the Genosian factory myself.
Oh, that did sound kind of like it through this little speaker. I couldn't hear it so well myself. I'm like, it was 82 is Death Star cannon. So we were both all off.
And we all fail.
like Riley, I was thinking Hoth too, but I mean, so, you know, Ben, and I've met Ben a couple times.
So, but Jimmy, I have to ask, so what would it feel like? What part of you kind of hopes that Ben Burtt, who will be in attendance at Celebration, will be in the audience during Smuggler's Bounty?
I didn't know Ben was going to be there.
Now
you tell me.
Let me double. I mean, I have to double check, but as this is going off of memory, I'm pretty sure he will be there.
Oh my God! Now you tell me. Where are those sleeping pills? I'd be very excited, and I know there's going to be a few notable presences within the audience for Smuggler's Bounty who I cannot reveal. Number one, because well, you don't know if they'll actually show up.
Yeah.
Number two, I don't. You know, that's their business, and I just want it to be as tight as possible. I want everything to go off as well as Smuggler's Bounty did, and I just want everyone to have fun. And I know there's going to be 4,000 people in that room looking at the stage, and I will not be looking up at them. I'm going to be staring at my script and my computer the whole time, off in my own little world.
That's amazing.
It's like, you know, when you played a little league game and stuff, you never really thought about who was watching you out on the field. You just play ball. And so that's what we're going to do at Smuggler's Bounty. Should Ben Burtt be in the audience? If there was any sort of reaction I'd like to get out of him would be something like, yeah, they got it. You know? Yeah. That's it. They got it. So that's what I want, you know, just some, if that would be possible, some sort of affirmation. Now, Matt Wood, of course, who actually is Ben Burtt's protege, he was part of Smuggler's Bounty or Smuggler's Gambit. I'm sorry, I'm getting my Smugglers mixed.
Fair enough.
But he was part of our first show.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he had some really kind things to say to me in front of everyone, and just to hear from the guy who. Supervising sound director at Skywalker Sound. I mean,
I'll never forget. He was at Dragon Con. I think it was last year, or maybe it was the year before. And he was sitting there, and he's with a poster of Grievous behind him. And there are a handful of people who are swinging by and saying hi. And I think like next to him was the cast. It may have been like the Teen Wolf cast or something with a giant line. And I'm like, this is just unjust because for a very sad reason of the way that, you know, popular culture and media works, people don't seem to recognize sound guys as much as they should. It's like if you go watch any Marvel movie or any of these big blockbusters, it's like half the time Matt Wood's name is right there in the credits.
Yes. I last I saw Matt was over the summer, and he had just gotten back to Northern California after working on Avengers. And it was Guardians.
Yeah.
Get my Marvels mixed up. It was Guardians, and we were actually hanging with them the day Guardians opened, and like a lot of people were very excited about the box office it was making and stuff. And I was just like, you know, that's just great. These guys, you know, put all their energy into. I mean, it requires so much work, and you're right about sound guys not getting the appreciation that they should. Trust me, I know, and Matt knows this, but it's because moviegoers don't realize that what they're seeing on the screen is completely being generated in a studio. They think the sound is being made. They think lightsabers make those sounds because that's just how they sound. But lightsabers don't exist. So you have to, and even for things that do exist, you have to create the right balance of sound for it to come through in a broadcast like coming through a speaker, you know, in an amplified venue. And and so people just take it for granted. And that's how you know that these guys are the best guys in the world is because everyone just completely abandons their belief in reality when they go into movies and get good sound design. That's how you get lost into a film.
Yeah. And it's so cool that you got your professional start in the career inspired by guys who worked on things like Star Wars. And that's so true of it's funny because Star Wars, whether it's professional, you know, filmmaking or audio editing or radio or even just outside of professions, or like, so for me, I'm ROTC and I'm interested in military, but a lot of that goes back to some of those stories that I watched growing up. And it's funny, the multifaceted way that Star Wars inspires so many people. And that's one thing that I think really makes it such a strong community builder for so many different reasons.
So you were a big fan of Top Gun?
No, in fact, no, I'm not. It's why I'm Air Force, I guess. No, I never saw Top Gun growing up. I only saw it most recently this last year. And it's just kind of one of those things. It's like, this kills Steve Glosson, but there's this giant black hole of obviously when I wasn't born in the 80s, which is kind of sad, but it's true. I missed it. And it's funny because in the Star Wars community, that part of popular culture so heavily defines everyone's experience. It's sort of a weird, you're a distant observer sometimes if you're a member of the younger millennial generation, but that's just
the
way
things
go.
Yeah, but you could catch up on that. I mean, I grew up in that era, but I grew up with no power. I caught up to all of that in that 10-year gap in the 90s.
Yeah, well, and see, and that's where even in the 90s, to some extent, I remember because my dad worked for an NGO overseas, so I grew up primarily throughout the 90s in Pakistan and Uzbekistan. I kid you not. So my experience was of popular culture was watching the same 7 Andy Griffith episodes on VHS that we had with us.
Mark, that explains a lot, doesn't it? That
it does.
Really explains a lot.
It probably does.
You're watching Dobie Gillis too. I mean, I know.
Dobie with Maynard T. Cribbs.
Yes. Maynard G. Cribbs. Yes. Or yeah. F Troop.
F Troop. That's how Riley got inspired. F Troop.
Well, and I do remember being on leave in the summer of 1999. And I went over to a friend's house, and in his bedroom, he had this giant shelf. And I mean, it's not like just a regular bookshelf. This covered half of his wall. And on it was this giant display of Pepsi bottles. And there's nothing but all episode one Pepsi cans. And I think he had collected like every single one of those things. And
was it still filled?
No. They were all emptied. Right. He's a very hyper kid. That was a...
Did he have the gold Yoda?
I have no idea. I just remember being like 8-9 years old and seeing all of that and just being amazed, and never saw the Phantom Menace, by the way, that year. And wouldn't see it until 5 years later. I do remember that summer, just even being in the States for like 2 months, the fervor around that movie. And I remember hearing all of the character names and becoming familiar with like the different vehicles and music. And I think, and this is when some of my older siblings got like a lot of these soundtracks and stuff and got into it. So that it was all there kind of peripherally until years later when I would finally actually get a chance to watch the Star Wars, you know, the first Star Wars film I ever would see, which was a VHS copy of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, dubbed in Pakistani.
No, but actually, that would have been
insult to injury. It's all Pakistani.
I need a combination of Jimmy. I need you to do your Liam Neeson impression, but in Farsi. And go. Fortunately, the massive is the same in both languages.
Oh yeah.
I'm slipping in the Harrison because I'm really drawing a blank.
That's true.
And nobody draws a blank.
Is it a matter of time until Liam Neeson turns and becomes bitter and becomes the...
We talked Harrison. About this. We discussed this. Could he be the next wave of Harrison Ford type curmudgeonry? And I say no. Liam is, he's having a good time, you know. Oh, yeah, sure, you know. He's just having a good time, you know. He's doing 50 movies in a year this year, of course. And, showing up on Jimmy Kimmel, and it's all just being very massive right now. You know?
I like the technique because I can only imagine, but I picture Jimmy getting really close to his microphone to really get kind of the deep vocal quality.
I'm actually directly miking only my Adam's apple. That's all you're hearing. So it's just the reverberation off the Adam's apple. And of course, you know, Liam has a massive Adam's apple. You know?
that's incredible. And I'll never forget one last side story. I remember it was Fan Days 2011 where, that was one of the first conventions I ever actually got to kind of interview different Star Wars, celebrities and actors who actually participated in that galaxy far, far away. And it was a strange experience because, Jimmy's my podcast inspiration. So I'm like, this feels kind of weird getting my feet wet trying actually doing some of these interviews. And it's not as easy as you make it look, Jimmy, at all. it is not. And you suffer dark looks from agents and volunteers, and you suffer awkwardness of explaining what a podcast is or.
Oh, well, that was, yeah. I mean, just a few years ago, it was still kind of a deviant practice, you know, podcast. Yeah. What are you trying to do to my client? You know,
well, and it doesn't help that the Zoom.
In fact, these agents think you're going to make their clients bend over and you strap on a rubber glove. It's like, no, not
no
podcast.
And it doesn't help that the Zoom recorder looks exactly like a taser, as George Lucas experienced when you interviewed him.
Oh yeah. I'm a nervous wreck. George walks into the room. This is 2009 at the Four Seasons Hotel in downtown Chicago. Oh. I'd never met Lucas before. I'm standing there with ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Jimmy Mack.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching George work his way down the line. And oddly, I felt this bizarre calmness come over me. He walked over to me and I'm holding the Zoom with the microphone. And I hold the Zoom so I could look at it to make sure the damn thing's working.
Yes.
When it's once in a lifetime interview. And he's like, Well, you got a taser? Don't tase me. And he's saying, Bill Zwecker from the Sun-Times was there. He overheard this and wrote it down and included that in his article about the whole banquet. He led off with that. George Lucas's sense of humor gets him by. It was something like that. It's like, you know, telling hapless local radio reporter Jimmy Mack not to tase him. I see Zwecker occasionally. I'll give him a high five on that. He's still with the Sun Times, but you know, that's a true story. So you have all this, you know, there's a lot going on, man. Especially when you're in a live environment, there's just so many things happening around you, and you just really have to, you know, people are like, well, how do you do it? It's just like, just hunker down and focus, and just stay focused on the person you're talking to. And if people are going to yell stuff at you, or like even pushy or whatever, just stay locked in. Don't forget what you're doing.
Stay on target.
Stay on target.
Stay on target. Thank you.
That was too easily teed up. No, but there I remember because I that was the first time I met Ben Burtt, and I remember thinking, man, it'd be cool to interview him. And then I turned around and I saw Jimmy Mack interviewing him, and I actually felt a great sense of relief because I thought I am way underqualified to interview the Star Wars audio god that is Ben Burtt, and I am I was more looking forward to the fact that Jimmy was going to get actually a true professional's perspective on the matter, and it was really cool.
I'm welling up. And you know what was really nice too is that you guys snapped a nice photo of me talking to him, and you sent that to me, which was very cool.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was such a cool experience at Fan Days, and I hope that because Celebration, it looks like it's going to be, and you know, who knows, but I really hope it ends up being an every other year event now, especially with Star Wars films coming out every year. I think that it's warranted, and it fits perfectly rather with the Disneyland, Disney World alternating locations. I really hope that they keep alternating between Orlando and Anaheim.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think the odds are pretty good in a couple weeks you're going to have your answer to where the next event is going to be.
I think so.
The closing ceremonies is going to be happening at 4:00 on the Celebration stage, and we're all going to be there for that, which is going to be great. That's the only time the whole weekend where you're going to have the hosts from all three main stages together. And so that we're going to do a retrospective of the weekend. And I don't know, the programming mentions something about you wanting to be there to hear about an announcement about something very cool.
Mm-hmm. So, I have to be there. Although I still think my theory is still that Steve Glosson was right. And I don't know if you're familiar with the meme on the show, but famously waiting in line for the closing ceremonies at Celebration 6, Steve was giving us all a hard time while we were recording, just sitting there in line saying, "Hey, they're going to announce episode 7, 8, 9. I'm telling you guys, it's true." And of course, we're getting weird side looks from people saying, "Really? Is that true?" I'm like, "Stop it, Steve." Of course.
You know,
I have a feeling. I have a feeling that if some details or contracts had worked out a little sooner, that may have been a much bigger closing ceremony.
You know, that could have actually been in the cards. That could have been in the cards for that weekend.
Who knows? The
announcement might have been made.
Who knows? Who knows?
But, well, you know, George was definitely working on episode 7 at that time. He was actively developing the next Star Wars film. And George himself was going to handle it, just like he did with the prequels, just like he did with the original trilogy.
Yeah.
He was going to fund it. He was going to shoot it. And there were just a lot of things in life that got in the way.
Famously. Yeah. No, there was that... huge was it?
Well, it was that interview. You know, Kathleen Kennedy was walking by, and it was like, "Oh, Glosson's on to us. We gotta skip next celebration."
I'm sure that's what happened. but you know, Steve is the always the optimist, and he was definitely not letting the dream of the sequel trilogy slide by, because at that point in fandom, it was like, "Well, what is going to happen after Star Wars Celebration 6? Where are we going? I mean, is it just going to be Clone Wars, the live action show? That sounds like it's way up in the air. How is this gonna go down? What's the next move?" There was no thought of films, and here we are approaching December. We hit December, and we are in position for 3 Star Wars films in an 18-month period.
That's going to be insane. I've been talking to Mark about it. We're going to see, you know, a Star Wars film 6 months from a Star Wars film.
How do we process it all?
I don't know if I can do it.
Popcorn.
I guess I could start a podcast or something. But that'd be crazy.
Cray cray.
Yes, it would. Man, Jimmy, thanks so much for coming on the Star Wars Report this week. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, I love you guys. Next to Rebel Force Radio, I think that the Star Wars Report is my favorite Star Wars podcast.
Well, I mean, we couldn't hope to come close except actually getting you guys on the show. So that's why we continue to bring you on. Thank you so much for really giving us kind of the lowdown on what to look forward to at Celebration and what's in store for us, and reminiscing about times past. It's been a blast. Where can folks find you and plug away? What do you got going on these days?
Well, we will be releasing one more episode of Rebel Force Radio before we hit the airplane to go to Anaheim, and that'll be coming out next Friday. Look for it on iTunes, Stitcher, at shotglassdigital.com, at rebelforceradio.com. We post up links all over the world, Facebook. We'll probably spray paint it on the gas station by your house, the URL where you can find it. So just look there. Nice. And also, you know, we are, as I believe you guys are too, we're also featured on the official Star Wars website, starwars.com, which is a very cool honor.
Indeed.
And you know, that's just the goal, is try to get the show out to as many people. And so this show is going to really be our Celebration pre-show. We're going to have all the hosts from the 3 main stages on, myself and Jason, David W. Collins, and of course, Jet James Arnold Taylor will be with us. And we're just going to talk about, I don't know, the wars and the awesome convention that will be Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. So I'm looking forward to that. And you guys can always follow us, Rebel Force Radio on Facebook. You can like us on Twitter, or maybe I did that backwards.
It's all social media. Are you guys on Snapchat yet? That's the question.
Just click that stuff. And no, we're not Snapchat, but I really want to make it my goal to expand our social media as the year moves on. And so I do plan on expanding to ChapSnat or whatever you're talking about and everything else under the sun. Currently, we have the latest edition of Star Wars Oxygen Volume 16. David Collins and myself going through the music of Star Wars Episode 7, The Phantom Menace, specifically the music of Tatooine and Pod Race. I think David was supposed to join us tonight. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it, but I'll tell you what, if you want to hear David Collins, listen to Star Wars Oxygen, because he always brings down some really incredible info for each and every episode. Always expands my appreciation of the John Williams soundtrack music. And for someone to be able to do that here, 38 years after the release of the first soundtrack for Star Wars, that's really saying something. And each and every time we record one of these shows, David really opens my eyes. And of course, you can see David Collins at the digital stage at Star Wars Celebration. You can see me and Jason Swank at the behind the scenes stage. Don't miss Smuggler's Gambit on the Celebration stage. And then watch for me to collapse in front of the doorstep of Anaheim Hospital on Monday following the convention. It'll be hysterical. Lots of
special event. Jimmy Mack collapses at the hospital stage.
Yes, being breastfed by BB-8. I don't even know what that means.
All right. That's gonna do it for this episode. Wow, it's hard to recover from that. That's an image. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Thanks again, Jimmy. Definitely be following all of the Rebel Force Radio programming, and especially Star Wars Oxygen, the best produced, most insightful Star Wars podcast, in my view. Can't miss it every month. And even when you guys do devolve into drunken George impressions at the end, it gets even better.
What makes you say they were drunken, sir?
I'm not saying that the impression was. I wasn't saying anything about the impressioneer.
No, I was not half as wasted during that show as I am during this show. So.
Fair enough. All right, so if you want to hit up the Star Wars Report, here's what you want to do. Just go to starwarsreport.com/about. That'll give you all of the links that you want for the show. That includes our Facebook, our Twitter. It's all Star Wars Report. You can find us very easily. The main plug I want to give, though, is starwarsreport.com/iTunes. That takes you to the iTunes page, and that's where you can plug away your review. And that always really helps spread the word about the show. Oh, man. Follow me and Mark on Twitter. It's at TheRileyGuy and at IllogicalRogue2. And that'll do it for this episode. Remember...
Meep.
Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Meep.
Who knew BB was a cup size?
Oh, God, that's so funny, it hoits.